Therefore, they didn't tell Prabhupada they were out of the street, and they were desperately looking for a temple. So eventually they found this place, couldn't find anything. They found this place, which is really, it was a storage place for vegetables. There were just three tiles on the ground, and there were no windows, just some roof lights. Anyway, we'll take it. And it's sort of, okay. I went to a building site, and were borrowing a little wood for Krishna, and as they were borrowing the third load, the cops came, and blue light came, in the earth. The temple president, Tamanjaya, said, "Start unloading the van. Start unloading, put it all outside." The cops came on and around, what's going on. They were unloading everything, and said, "Well, officer, you know, we are monks, and we took some wood for our church, but then we felt really bad, thought God wouldn't be pleased with this, so we decided to bring it back." "All right," said the cop, "put it all back, and don't let it happen again." We put it back, and a little later, loaded it back up. Finished the floor in the temple, somehow wrong, problems come. Then it was time to carve Lord Jagannath, and a plan was made. One was making an altar, another one Lord Jagannath. And everything was worked out fine. But when the person who was supposed to carve Jagannath came to the shop, he saw a block of wood which was much bigger than originally conceived. And thought, "Well, Lord Jagannath wants to be big. It's his design." But he forgot to tell the guy who built the altar. So on the day of the installation, Lord Jagannath was too big. It didn't fit. So they had to sort of nail a plank on top of the altar so that the deities could sort of fit. And Prabhupada was upset, really upset. And this was Amsterdam. Prabhupada, the great guru of the Hare Krishna, had just come. A few months earlier, the Maharishi Yogi had been there smiling and, you know, flower power and everything happy. And there was the Hare Krishna guru. The TV is there, and he's angry. How can I be angry? Really angry that things were not in order. And he got in everybody's case. He said, "Where are the fruits? Where are the fruits? What have you done here?" So one Mataji went to the kitchen to bring the fruits, and she didn't come back. So Prabhupada, 10 times, I said, "Where are those fruits? How long does it have to take? Bring the fruits!" Finally she came and brought the fruits out. And Prabhupada looks at it and says, "This is completely useless." She crying, and Prabhupada didn't care. He kept on being angry. But it was all film. I'm still trying to get that film. We wrote it to the TV station. Anyway, so as this is going on, you know, there was one boy who used to be a regular sort of, and he also had a problem with anger, and the devotees had given him instruction what to do. So he raised his hand and promised, "Yes." And the boy said, "Why are you so angry? Just chant Hare Krishna." And Prabhupada looks at him, put his hand in his deep bag, and starts chanting. So that's good. That's good advice. The anger of Prabhupada actually made devotees, because some people saw. He's on TV, but he doesn't care. You know, he's not like, "Hi, Mom," you know. That's why I look at his very best. No, he was just his natural self. He didn't care for all those viewers, he cared for Krishna. And that was convincing, actually. So in this way, Prabhupada's anger was also pure anger. It was for Krishna, and it was at the right time, at the right place. Therefore, whatever mood Prabhupada displayed, one could be comfortable. Of course, sometimes also afraid that Prabhupada would be angry, people would be obviously afraid. But on the other hand, not thinking that his feelings were out of place. This is personalism. Impersonalism is everything is shanti, shanti, shanti. Only one feeling, shanti. But in Krishna consciousness, it's not always shanti, right? And then we also experience that, you know, okay.
Hurry up, come on, get in the car!
Oh, God, yeah. Isn't this the mode of passion? No, no, this is perfectly transcendental. It has nothing to do with passion. And most of my, it sure most of my passion, right? It sure does, but it's not passion. It's like, because sometimes really, Krishna's needs are urgent, yeah? And, yeah, it's too much in the way of witness, you know, sorry, but we're just sort of, you know, we still have to check our Gayatri, you know, because it's 12 o'clock, look, you know, get in the car, right? No, it's not appropriate to check the Gayatri in the car. And this is the program, right? Get in the car. And so, sometimes, transcendence even transcends the mode of goodness. And it's not... The mode of goodness is actually not our goal. We're not aiming to attain the mode of goodness. Not at all. The mode of goodness is simply the state on which we lean when we are not transcendental. Yeah. Because otherwise we are in this world under the influence of the three modes of material nature, and ignorance and passion, dangerous, because they drag you along. So therefore, because we are not in transcendental ecstasy, we take shelter of the mode of goodness, because at least there the senses are regulated, subdued, and so it's safe. So it's a safe platform. But the transcendental platform, well, you know, it can go all kinds of ways. You may recall Nityananda's appearance there, we were remembering how Lord Nityananda was dancing around these young boys, and they were not exactly the mode of goodness, they were ripping trees out of the ground in the field town, right? So, I don't know if that's the mode of goodness, you know. And you might say, poor tree, no, the tree's true, they got, surely they got liberation enough for being ripped up in the children's kirtan, so there was nothing bad about the whole thing. But it takes a bit of transcendental vision, because from a platform, the mode of goodness is a mortal sin to destroy a tree. Nowadays, you know, they can do about anything in this world, you know, but anything but kill a tree. I mean, that's like one of the most serious things you can do in the entire world, right? You can do anything in this world, but if you throw some junk out of the window of your car, right? I mean, the whole world would just flip out, you know, that would be like serious things. What about the environment? This is the most sacred thing. Because environmentalism is the religion of the day. Let's be realistic. The environment, you don't care about the environment. Well, to be frank, we care about Krishna, and if it suits Krishna, we're ready to make a huge mess. No problem at all. If that's just... if it just happens to be favorable for Krishna's service, our world mess things up like anything, no problem at all. So, transcendental morality is not parallel to mundane morality. Transcendental morality is the pleasure of Krishna. And in the same way, Arjuna did not want to fight. And if you read the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, well, Arjuna comes with some really convincing arguments. Any humanist or pacifist will go for the first chapter, they would consider that's the best chapter of the whole Gita. Because the first chapter, Arjuna gives all these good reasons why not to fight. He's saying, like, you know, what is the point of fighting for the kingdom of earth? And when, especially when those who we are supposed to enjoy it with will be killed in the process of obtaining that kingdom. This is madness. How could you fight for such a king? Kill all those who will be meant to enjoy. Yes, yes, yes. Right, yes, yes. Makes sense. Very wise. Very intelligent. People would say it would be applauded. And Krishna lies over the table and basically gives some explanation to them and says, so fight, right? That's terrible. People have, anti-cult movement has written books, how this book, the Bhagavad Gita, is a demoniac book because it invokes people to kill their family members.
Of course, some people really get it, and they read the Gita, they really understand what it's all about. That's quite clear. But it's interesting, the point about transcendental morality, how we are transcendental to material laws, material considerations, and even to the law of goodness. Sometimes you can say to a devotee, you're too much in the law of goodness, that's your problem. It can happen. I mean, for example, you know, you had a guy on the door in the festival in Vrindavan, and he was so soft that anybody who said, I'm not paying, he would just say, well, you should pay. And he said, well, I don't have any money. And then they just walk right through. And many people just came in without paying. He was dead in the case, it was too much in the road of goodness. And he got me a little bit in the mode of terms of that passion. But then all these people in, that they didn't pay. I can't believe it. Get your act together, you know? Just get a little more passion. So, like this, we are sometimes so worried. Maybe I am too passionate. Maybe I will never be the mode of goodness. Well, maybe you will never be, right? It's not so important. What is really important is that we please Krishna. That is important. And then we use whatever we have in the service of Krishna. And the mode of goodness, we lean on it now. Varna ashram. Varna ashram is a crutch. God sort of imagines someone is walking on crutches because he can't walk yet. So he walks around the system of varna ashram, which is basically the system which is gradually leading up to the mode of goodness. Slowly he becomes passion goal and he becomes and then one day, you know, you just get to the pure ecstatic transcendental platform and throw those crutches away and start dancing, right? Just jump up and down. That is truly our aim. So, don't get it wrong, I'm not speaking out against the mode of goodness. I think it is nice. Because for Krishna's service, really, we need the entire range of emotions, including sometimes what appears to be a lot of passion. But passion, the difference between passion and, well, transcendental passion, is simply that in passion, we're trying to, in the mode of passion, we're trying to satisfy our own senses, and we become frustrated. And in what appears to be transcendental passion, we're trying to satisfy our senses of Krishna. Just bhokya kama bhaya kamsal vrisas chinyaya vipam vishnisra mandat yuyam bhaktivayandi. In that verse, different relationships are described that the devotees have with Krishna. It says, the gopis, they have these lusty feelings for Krishna. But it's not lust. It is not lust. Admini vikyam siddhara bulikam krishna nirbhiti siddhara. It is admini vikyam, interested in your own senses. That is lust. Krishna, interested in the senses of Krishna, that is praying. That is prayer. So, great eagerness to please Krishna is not passion. It is not. To be very active in the service of Krishna is not passion. Because otherwise, it is said, the mode of ignorance is lazy, the mode of passion is active, and the mode of goodness is peaceful. So, therefore, active could appear to be passion. So then sometimes also the question may be asked, well, how can you distinguish? I mean, maybe you're serving Krishna. How can you distinguish whether you're acting in passion or whether you are acting out of enthusiasm? How can you make a distinction? Distinction is easily made. Because if we act out of passion, we will work very hard for Krishna, and after we totally burn out. It's like, whereas when we work really hard for Krishna, on practical transcendental enthusiasm, we'll be feeling very enlightened. It doesn't mean that we will not be tired. Maybe you will be, like today is Monday, and for me Monday is a mellow day, mellow Monday. That's what I was asking. Monday is like the one day where I go slow. No pushing, everything relaxed. I cut corners left and right, and it's joy. It's Monday. The weekend is over. It's all done, and I'm going to cruise. That's it. But you may say, that's Maya, right? For a Swami, I don't think so. I think that's Krishna consciousness. It's ecstatic. So one can ecstatically be lazy. I might even put my feet on the table, today. Go sit with a book on the sofa, put my feet on the table, and just sort of hang out, Pretty transcendental, all for Krishna. There are even pictures of Prabhupada with his feet on the table. So there's absolutely nothing wrong about putting your feet on the table, even although your mom, of course, has drilled it in, At least my mom did, As soon as I put my feet there, I sort of hear that voice of my mother, She's there. And therefore I'm going to put them on my head today. So we can relax, we can be human in Krishna consciousness. And this is very important. It takes years to become a human being. You join the Hare Krishna movement and it's all everything is Maya and everything is Krishna, and it's like it's really serious, either you're Maya, either you're Krishna consciousness, Maya, this is Maya, that is Maya. It's like, I was very strict, in my early days. I would sleep 6 hours, no more. So I would calculate, if I sleep 5 hours and 40 minutes, that gave me a train and a nap in the day, That was it. And it was like, 6 hours a night, I used it up, walk around like dizzy and sort of keep it up. These days I don't worry about that, so much anymore. That will come, that's spontaneous. Of course, there are guidelines, not too much sleep and so on, not too little also. So, we must become very natural in our Krishna consciousness. Because that's the best we have. We have our nature. We have who we are. That's what we do best. If you try to be something you're not, we're not so good at it. So if you do an act and you try and act it out, a role, obviously it can look impressive. We're probably better at doing what we naturally are. Naturally good in something. So that's the best we can offer to Krishna. So being natural is very important. It's really what we are meant to be. One might think that in Krishna consciousness one has to control his mind, control his senses, control his nature in this way. One limits his personality. And in the initial stages it may be like that because we have to control our lower nature. But
But gradually, the lower nature is doing all these things for ourselves. But gradually, everything, every talent we have, uses for Krishna. Uses for Krishna. That's very nice. Then spiritual life also becomes broad, it becomes natural, and yet pure at the same time. So, one day I came in a temple, and the temple president wasn't there, and the Lord said, he's gone to the beach.
Fine, right?
And then somebody said, 3 days ago. 3 days? Really? And yes, he had gone to the beach, and he was just sitting there on the beach, right, looking at the ocean, I heard. So I thought, well, it was a good reason to go to the beach, which I don't mind that much, you know. So I went to the beach, and so I sat down next to him, and I didn't say anything, just sat next to him looking at the ocean, and after about 20 minutes or so, I said, nice view, isn't it? And he said, anyway, we slowly started a conversation. And what happened to him was that at one point, after so many years in devotional service, and after doing so many things, it sort of hit him from who am I really?
Who am I really?
And that's when he went to the beach and sat down in front of the ocean. And after 3 days, he sort of slowly had landing, you know, and slowly brought him down, brought him back in into an identity. But he never became his own president again after that. He's a nice guy. And I'm still chanting Hare Krishna. So everything's okay. But sooner or later, it is true. In the beginning, we don't, and we put our own feelings, our own nature, everything we put aside, and we're basically trying to accept the discipline of being a devotee. Prabhu, a devotee doesn't sit like that. Prabhu, a devotee doesn't smile like that. Prabhu, a devotee doesn't wear clothes like that. Prabhu, Prabhu, touching your feet, go wash your hands. Prabhu, touching your nose, wash your hands. Prabhu, touching your mouth, wash your hands. That's mochi. That's offensive. Prabhu, you are offensive. Right? I mean, the whole day, you know, everything you do is offensive, and it's sort of getting the conscience. I'm just a big oil. I'm just offensive to something. And gradually, you adjust and you become, you begin to be public. Sit proper. Right? And sit a little straight and so on. So, alright, everything prescribed, but the cause is, sooner or later, little years go by, a devotee comes to a point where he does start to wonder, who am I really? Who am I actually? I mean, as a human being, you know? And what is my nature? And you sort of encounter yourself again. And then what? Then what are you going to do? Well, you know, sometimes you see some middle-aged devotee with a bit of a belly and a naturally bald head on rollerblades, you know, skating around. And you know, it hit him, you know. And he's got to sort of connect with himself again. And what not, you know, the old saxophone comes back out. and rocking away. But, to say, you know, I mean, it does look like those hippies in Byron Bay were still trying, you know. I mean, 60 years old, toothless, etc. And it, still standing there, throwing these sort of ribbons in the air, you know, that they have. You know, you see those ribbons on a little stick. You work through them in the air in circles and patterns, and you stand there for hours at 60 years old, you know, doing that, and you go, My God, are you ever going to grow up? So, this time in our spiritual life, when we become more natural, is a critical moment. Because on the one hand, we want to be more natural, but on the other hand, that doesn't mean that we want to open up to the lower nature. We want to rather be natural, but remain Krishna conscious. So this stage where we become natural in our spiritual life, and go after having followed the rules and regulations strictly, and after having made some sacrifice for Krishna, you can try it. But then, you have to still abandon the lower nature, and you have to be able to abandon the lower nature. When you want to get too natural and it draws you to the lower nature, okay, pull the reins. Not yet ready for being too natural. Right? Just be strict and tight, and don't allow your mind any room, because it draws you down to the lower nature, where it's going to take you. And burn, you will, my friend, and burn, you will. So that's the problem. But there are reactions. Yeah. If there were no reactions, then it was a different thing. I mean, to be honest, if I would have designed spiritual life, I would have probably designed everything in there, but I might have left celibacy out. I might have left that out if I would have designed it. But anyway, I didn't design it. Krishna designed it, and he put it in. So, alright, we go with it. Yeah. We go with it, and then we eventually come out at the other side and see how it frees us from so many unwanted entanglements and so on. But you have to be careful when you just let go and let the human side come out, because in the name of letting the human side out, you may just let the animal out. Because inside, behind our nice, dominical, devotee profile, there is the beast. Behind that very cultured and well-behaved personality, there is the beast. Of course, you can think, in all these civilized people that he's there, and he's waiting, and he wants to make little things. And he goes, and he goes, watch out. At one stage, if you give him a little rope, and he runs for it. It's something like walking with a Danish dog, And you walk with a big Dane, and you hold him tight, and if you give him too much rope, and he starts running and gets on it, he might be dragging you over the floor, He might be dragging you along, because if you're a big boy, that would be no problem. But you get the idea, though. If we let the beast go loose, then things might get out of control, and he might drag us along. So that might be too much. But otherwise, as we become a little bit fixed in our Krishna consciousness, and as we sort of say goodbye to these more lower degraded activities, at least in the gross sense. And, if I for a moment may compare the mind to an ocean, in the beginning, the material desires are right up front. You stand on the beach and there's this huge ship, my material desire, coming right through. And just get on board. But eventually, these material desires move away to the horizon. So when the material desires are somewhat more on the horizon, then don't have to be so afraid. There may be still something there, but it's not so much in the center that one immediately operates to it. I don't time it. It is the time that we can venture to become more natural in our Christian consciousness. And that is a great asset to use our nature. I sometimes go to Jaipur and well, then I'll never fail to visit the original deities of the Goswamis. The so many deities out there. And one of the deities that are there are Radha Gopinath, the original Radha Gopinath from Vrindavan, the deities that were installed by Madhu Pandit, the Goswami. And Madhu Pandit is sort of like quite a far out personality. Because at the side of the temple there's a show window, a display window, and in there is the jacket and the hat, right, of Madhu Pandit. And he had a hat, something like this, right? But a very, very small tussilis, and a jacket also made a very small tussilis, and that's what he would wear in the morning while he's changing around. Now, I consider that pretty... I consider that far out, right? I mean, because it sort of shows that Madhu Pandit was not what you call a square. Madhu Pandit was clearly not exactly, you know, afraid of what people would think of him. Like, can you imagine, you know, I mean, if anybody would walk in tomorrow morning in a tulsi jacket and a tulsi the devotees would line up with their cell phones taking pictures, you know? That would be... And it would be all on the internet, you know? You bet, right? You bet. We may support something, you know, like that. Would you go that far out? The mother kind of didn't worry about it, right? So these our ghost stories were indeed sometimes quite well unusual persons, doing things that were out of the ordinary. They were free. They were very natural. They were not like inhibited by social convention. They had gone way beyond the herd syndrome, you know, which is like. There's a sheep there, another one there, and you sort of look, what's he doing? Okay, well, I'll do something, but not too different. A little different.
And this way, everyone is sort of trying to be different, but not too different. You know what I mean?
So, how boring. And then, how nice and colorful this Madhu Pandit Goswami is. It showed that pure devotee becomes natural. In case you think that this is a trip of becoming Karma Swami, that I'm sort of overemphasizing this point, I must point out to you that that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita of Karma Karanpura, he stresses naturalness as a symptom of advancement in devotional service. So in this way, it is authorized, and it is actually not only authorized, but it is really what Krishna consciousness is all about. One goes through the rules and regulations of Vaidhi Bhakti to come out purified, and then just become spontaneous in the service of Krishna and use everything we have. So that is personalism, and therefore it's not all Shanti, Shanti. Serving Krishna, all emotions. for Krishna. And Prabhupada was expert. Expert he was. One day during the program, there was this Mayavadi Sannyasi, also a big public program organized by outsiders, and Prabhupada was the main attraction. So afterwards, the Mayavadi Sannyasi who had spoken also came and said, I want to present you with a gift. And he presented a box with brochures, Mayavadi brochures. So Prabhupada gracefully accepted it and told the boys, please keep this box. So, a few weeks later, on a Sunday program, Prabhupada says to the boys, that box of the brochures from that Mayavadi, are you still living there? Yes, yes, Prabhupada. Please bring them. And Prabhupada says, please give everyone one of the brochures. Mayavadi brochures, and everyone was holding Mayavadi. Prabhupada is distributing Mayavadi brochures. And Prabhupada says, did everyone get one of the brochures? What happened? This is totally strange. And Prabhupada said, oh, do you all come now? Now please, open it up. Yeah? And everyone opens it up, and Prabhupada says, and put it on the floor in front of you. And then he used it as plates to serve the Yeah, my boss in favor, you know. Go over there in this way. He engaged his mind as he was so if you're intelligent, anything can be used to the service of Krishna. Any question there?
Maharaj, how far can we link?
Could you say it again? How?
How far can we link?
Unalloyed devotional service. To be ready to do the needful, whatever Krishna requires, that we will do. Yes, that is just like Hanuman. Right? He was a monkey, and no matter what, right? Hanuman was an educated monkey. He knew the Vedas very well. Right? He personally learned from the sun god. But still, some monkey traits were in his character, and he just stayed. And sometimes, but he was completely dedicated to Lord Ramachandra, but still, somewhat in a monkey way. Right? So, isn't it? So, you know, like, I mean, you couldn't expect that Hanuman was going to become like,
a very sort of strange, conscious person.
He was a monkey. So, but totally dedicated. So, unalloyed means we have no personal agenda. No personal agenda whatsoever. Nothing for me. Everything for Krishna. Right? And naturalness means, and then I'll give everything I have in service of Krishna. Right? My own nature and the whole kits and caboodle. And so on.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Maharaj, you were talking about the point of building the class of that environment. It's such a big issue. Some people might think that the devotee attitude towards the environment is something that we don't really venture to care for the environment. And they might do something in public that we may interrupt their preaching,
right,
serve people in their preaching.
Yes.
An example that I had earlier, that I had personally earlier in my Krishna consciousness, I was with a devotee and we were on a train.
Yeah.
And the senior devotee, using that argument that you gave,
Yeah. Patent
paper or something,
chucked it out of the window.
Everybody on the train, we were all dressed, like devotees, everybody on the train was just like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah.
And I was sitting next to him and I said, Prabhu, what did you do? What? You know? And he said, we don't care for the convention,
right.
We don't care for the environment. So where does the discretion come in?
No, very good, very good. A balancing point, because I use it as an example to illustrate transcendental morality, but I wasn't advertising that this is what you should do. You should just throw everything out of the window and just, you know, or not leave the environment. But when I joined the Christian movement, I came from a vegetarian, macrobiotic, biological, dynamical, sort of environment-friendly background, yeah? So I was never using plastic. Plastic was out, you know, down with plastic. I had a sweater that smelled like a sheep, you know. Pure, you know, the real thing, right? Real wool and all that, you know. So it was all like pure and honest. And I had this coat, you know, winter coat, really good also, a navy coat. And I came into the Hare Krishna movement, and the first thing they did is they said, devotees don't wear coats like that. They took my coat, right, and just threw it in the garbage can. And instead, they gave me this nylon jacket, which was yellow, black, yellow, striped. I don't know what it was. And it was too nice. I mean, I had to go and walk around this ridiculous thing. And then the major identity crisis, of course. Yeah. And even went through a real strange experience, because one day I was in that outfit, the last man in this outfit somewhere in a far off country town, and in talking in a shopping mall, and suddenly the mother of my girlfriend comes out of the shop. And it was totally the wrong place. She was not supposed to be there. You know? She was hundreds and hundreds of days away from there. What she was doing that, I was so shocked. And also to be in this wasp outfit. That she goes, "What are you doing here?" And I go, "Lady, I am going to do And she goes, "You don't want to know me? You don't want to know me?" And I just go, "Lady, I don't know what you're talking about. You're going to stay in this morning." I don't think that once you stop it, you can't stop. Lost man. So, there was too much. I mean, plastic jacket, plastic shoes, plastic plates, you know, plastic Hare Krishnas, you know. Yes, you can use plastic in the service of Krishna, but that doesn't mean that it suddenly becomes okay. That was our immature understanding. In the retreat, we discussed the topic of Ugra Karma. It's an Ugra world, you know. In the Ugra world, an Ugra morning, we get up and put on our, and take an Ugra shower, an Ugra water, and wash ourselves, an Ugra soap, and then we have Ugra breakfast. Ugra meaning angry, aggressive, destructive, everything, right? And then we go in our Ugra car, and back to our Ugra job, you know, and do that all day. Ugra destructive, and Ugra horrible work meant to destroy the world, and everything is like that. It doesn't need to be like that. We have failed as a movement to show a better alternative. We are so transcendental, we can use all the garbage in the service of Krishna, but in this way, we are not sending out the message that there is a positive alternative. We should use the mode of goodness. It's better. We may be transcendental to the mode of goodness, but still, when we use material things, let's use the mode of goodness. Let's use honest ingredients that are not genetically engineered. It's all right, the room is transcendental. Well, I don't like soy products because most soy is genetically engineered. Yeah. And it doesn't attract me. And I'll tell you one more story, since I'm a bit of a storyteller. I came home one day from a program, and there was this
TV program on, people were watching. I stated that some people were watching the program on. And about genetic engineering. It showed all the animals in the boxes and blown up and horrible, right? And of course I was shocked as well as horrible. But then they started to show how they were messing around with the veggies. And I got worried. I am a vegetarian. What's going on? This is my food. So I was getting more concerned and more worried. And showing how they were putting pig jeans and pig potatoes, these huge ones, eat them long enough and get this stuff scratching at the lower back and the nose slowly grows a little rounder. And then that night, I had a dream, and in my dream I went into the supermarket. And in the supermarket there were these three cabbages, and they were singing, "Take us home, Ramallah. Take us home, Ramallah." And I woke up sweating. I really woke up sweating because I realized now it's a dream, but it won't be wrong. It was real. Because this is what they want. Singing cabbages. And I'm freaked out. So, where are we going? We need to show that an honest authority. But that is our identity. So out with the plastic plates if possible. You know, down with plastic, down with all the artificial things. We even have a GDC resolution on the TV. It's on the books. And I think that's a good one. That we should. But we're not just caring for the environment for the sake of, you know, keeping everything being nice and clean so that we can enjoy it. If you go to Switzerland, it's the cleanest country in the world, right? Everything, little white picket fences, every nice little geraniums, etc. Very nice. So when you're there, you think, this is the mode of goodness. But perhaps you know, this is the mode of passion. And it's cleanliness is the mode of goodness. No, it's the mode of passion because they're trying to enjoy. It's all about enjoying the world. So, our keeping the mode of goodness, yes. Do not disturb. Do not bring out the lower modes. It keeps things clean. To create a favorable environment for spiritual life. Live natural. Stay away from machines if you can. If you don't need them, don't use them. They're demoniac things. Actually, it's like everyone is playing with their phones all the time. It's ridiculous, you know. Demoniac things. We use computers to get rid of computers. We use cars to get rid of cars. We use phones to get rid of phones. We use this whole modern uber-karma world to get rid of the uber-karma world. And one day, we're going to give you some bullocks, boys. Yeah? And milking cows, girls. That's it. Thursday morning, girls. Cow milk a cow. Yeah? That's where it has to go. Yeah? Back to a more natural way of life at one stage. And we need some heroes, who are actually going to go out there and do proper methods. And we didn't fulfill that order. Sometimes I think, well, there's a Swami, I'm traveling around the world and I can sing Parivajak, you know. I have no home traveling around the world. But other times I think, well, maybe I'm more Kuti Chuck, you know, because I have a Kuti here, a little cottage, wherever I go. It's all decked out, it's pretty good. So I go from cottage to cottage, you know, and get cottage cheese on the way. Life is not that rough, you know. So, Pari Majak,
we need a hero.
We need a hero, yeah, we need a hero.
be a hero who will do something, who will do something difficult, who will look for a new frontier. So as a sannyasi, you're quite comfortable. And but the new frontiers in teaching China, you can go to China and you can really better it out there. It's not easy. Or you can go to Africa. There's a whole continent, still a lot to do. It's not exactly comfort zone anymore. So there's something to do. And then there's a third form of currency, and that is self-sufficiency, living off the land. Which Prabhupada told us to do, grow castor oil for light. Very basic, right? Very basic. These three fronts, well, I can see as being the three frontiers where we can still do some pioneering and just need some heroes. Not that it's not okay to you know, live nice in a nice, comfortable, push the country's home in a nice place in the world where everything is shanti shanti. That's awesome.
Can you would you like to tell us how you learned the Hare Krishna movement?
Oh. I've told it many times. Nothing unusual. I suffered in the material world. Nothing seemed to really make sense. My family was utterly materialistic, just thinking money, 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 money. Religion was out the door at the generation of my grandparents, and I felt it was a major vacuum, something lacking. So I was looking, and I was 15, I thought I should be self-realized. And I decided that the process I would follow was playing guitar to become self-realized. And I played with it and did something for me that might be me. So eventually I thought maybe I have to look for a teacher. Then via different teachers, one day, courage. So I came. And that's all I'm telling you today. Because the full story, full color, 3D takes 2 hours. So I'll keep you in suspense.
You got a book?
From a shelf of a friend, bookshelf of a friend. That was a reference. Thanks a lot.
Oh, that's coming down the timeline.